thewellnesscouch.com, streaming wellness into your lives. Download the app today.
You're listening to Wellness Women Radio with women's health experts, Dr. Ashley Bond, the pregnancy and birthing guru, and the queen of hormone imbalances, the period whisperer herself, Dr. Andrea Huddleston. They're raising the bar for women's health by bringing you the most up-to-date health and wellness information to live your best life. Now, onto the show.
This episode of Wellness Women Radio is very proudly brought to you by Dinner Twist. Dr. Ashley and I want to let you in on a little secret of how we maintain our healthy whole foods lifestyle with very little time. And one of those ways is actually with Dinner Twist. So they plan, they shop, they deliver everything to our door to take all of the guesswork out of having really healthy meals for dinner each night. I love Dinner Twist because they are a locally family-owned business here in Perth in Western Australia, and all of their produce is locally sourced and seasonal. So they are really invested in all of their suppliers as well, which is absolutely amazing. Everything is so fresh. Ashley and I both get the Wholesome Box, which is naturally gluten and dairy free as well, and is very consistent with a paleo type lifestyle as well. So it's, you know, completely consistent with, you know, the way that we want to eat and want to feed our loved ones too. This is also how I trick Dean into thinking that I can actually cook. So seriously, if I can do it, everybody can, trust me. And their recipes are so delicious. They also have other options apart from the Wholesome Box. So they have a family box for bigger size families, an express box if you're really short on time, as well as a vegan box too. Now, we would love to give you the opportunity for you to actually try Dinner Twist and realize how healthy, how delicious, and how fresh it is, but also how much easier this is going to make life as well. So we have a special promo code for you, and that is going to give you $35 off your first box. And that is WWR for Wellness Women Radio. So we would love you to try for yourself. Don't take my word for it, but let me know what you think. Without further ado, ladies, onto the show.
Hello there, wonderful listeners. Thank you so much for joining us on Wellness Women Radio. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Andrea. And please don't forget to follow us on all of our social platforms. So on the Wellness Women Official on Facebook and Instagram, I am drandrea.xo on Insta and The Period Whisperer on Facebook. And you can find Ashley on Dr. Ashley Bond on everything. Ladies, we always absolutely love your questions and queries and any of your suggested topic ideas as well. So please don't hesitate to keep sending those through to us. We love them. Hey, Ash.
Hey. We're a little hiatus, but we have another great episode to record. So I'm kind of excited actually to hang out and to chat and to cover something that we have been wanting to do for a long time. And we've been tiptoeing around it because we had this weird hold back of like not wanting to offend anyone, because so many of our friends and people we know and clients are all excited and on board and doing this thing. And we were like, oh, a bit touchy. Like, do we want to dispel the myth, or do we want to support them, or, you know, how do we do this? So tonight we are going to talk about the pros and cons, the benefits, the research behind infrared saunas and ice bathing or cold water immersion therapy. So,
or even just saunas, because Ash and I have sort of divided and conquered for this episode.
It's huge. There's so much of it.
And we could have done like separate episodes for just like cold exposure and separate ones for, you know, the heat or heat bathing or whatever you want to call it. So we've divided and conquered. So Ash, I've covered saunas in general, not just sort of infrared, but I definitely want to talk about the distinction between the two, because I think that's really important.
Beautiful. So have you ever done any saunering or ice bathing? Is that something you've done?
Well, I actually newly have a sauna at home, Ash. So anytime you want to come over for a sauna, you are so welcome to.
Cool.
So, yes, I do have an infrared sauna at home now, and I love it. But I'm also not under any, you know, illusion about the health benefits that it, you know, relays and what the reality of that actually is, and also the potential risks with it too, which I'm, you know, some people might actually find surprising, but we'll go through that. I've also had terrible experiences with ice baths because I am definitely a heat person. I hate being cold. I hate the cold. I don't like cold showers. I would happily stand under burning temperatures rather than get in the cold. And so the first time I did an ice bath, I think I lasted about 9 seconds.
That's pretty good. Most people don't actually get in one at all. You don't get past your feet. So the fact that you got all the way in is super impressive.
It just shocked me so much that, like, and Ash, you would have cold exposure every time that you get in the water when you're training in the ocean in winter, right?
Correct.
So you don't need to get an ice bath, whereas I am a chicken and I will only swim, like, I like swimming in the ocean in summer, but I'm not going to get in there in winter. Anyway, so you know that shock that your breathing and your lungs get when you get into really cold water and it takes you a minute to actually catch your breath. I wasn't expecting that, and I've only experienced that one other time when I was water skiing in Queenstown in the middle of summer, but the water was icy cold. So I fell off the skis and couldn't breathe, and it took me a minute to figure that out. So I had that same experience getting into the ice bath, and so I got out pretty quick, but then I did get back in. And then for our team Christmas party this year, I had planned like an amazing race type challenge for the team where they were in a couple of teams and they had to go all around Fremantle following these clues. And one of them took them to Alchemy Saunas where they had to do an ice bath challenge. And each and every one of my team did 5 minutes each in the ice bath at 3 degrees. I think it was 3 or 4 degrees. And most of them, bar one, had not actually been in an ice bath before. I was so proud of them. It was incredible. I did not get in. I was the adjudicator, right?
You've got like super weird team challenges and stuff. I'm like, I like our team. We just went and had a really nice social dinner. We finished up with gelato and a walk through town. It was so nice. And we just got to wear daggy, you know, Christmas stockings. It was really cool.
Oh, that's cute. I really shot myself in the foot with my team Christmas parties that I have to outdo myself each year now because it's such a thing. So anyway, this year was the amazing race. But I digress. So yes, and they all were saying how amazing they felt afterwards too. So there's undeniable mood elevation benefits to, you know, ice baths and cold plunging and everything. But Ash, do you want to start with that? We'll start with the cold. And obviously these are so bloody popular. So, you know, take it away.
Well, I think, you know, for me, my sort of first exposure to cold immersion, you know, therapy came when I moved overseas and lived in the Netherlands. And yes. So Holland, for everyone who can't understand the Netherlands, some people go, where? They're like, where? I'm like, Holland. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. And there is a gentleman there, Wim Hof, who's a Dutchman, and he's known as the Iceman. He's done all these, you know, incredible records, altitude, freezing lakes, you know, immersion challenges. You know, just things that are superhuman, extraordinary. But, you know, he doesn't claim to be superhuman. He just claims to be a really, you know, well-trained individual. He believes everyone has the same capacity and resilience if we train ourselves to. So, you know, in the thick of this, in the Netherlands, there's always a New Year's Day dip in the ocean. And so, of course, it's winter in the Netherlands, not like us summer babes just hanging on the beach on a summer's day. So you'll see like literally hordes, thousands of people running, half of them naked, into the ocean with beanies on their heads. It's just hilarious. It's such a funny sight. And, you know, so that's a bit of a tradition. And, of course, you know, there are countries where they're frozen over. So it's not unusual to see people ice, you know, cold challenged and then jumping into saunas. It's a very European thing to do.
Yes.
You know, so much so that like in Sweden, they leave their babies outside in prams in winter to give them, it's got a whole name. Pete was talking about it the other day and I was like, oh, I have to remember that word and I've just forgotten it. So I don't sound very, articulate. But the interesting thing is they all know that that improves resilience.
Mm.
So, you know, and I guess resilience is the big thing. I really think that the trend of ice baths and saunas, is just about this allostatic stress that we have in life, which is this idea that based on the stress, our biorhythms will adapt, you know, in positive ways or negative ways, depending on what we expose ourselves to. So putting ourselves under any extra ends of the extreme, so extreme cold or you know, high heats, will create this allostatic stretch, which actually improves our bandwidth, you know, our survival range. If that is, I mean, it's just a biological imperative, right?
Yeah.
Historically, we need to have a really good survival range. We need to be able to move around as a nomadic tribe and survive critical environmental events, whether it be blizzards, you know, cyclones, whatever it is. And we required resilience to do that. And I think this all stems from the idea that a contemporary world is very controlled. We live in warmed houses, air-conditioned houses. We have all the clothing and things we could possibly ever need to stay very mid-range. We stay very controlled in our exposure levels. So do I think there's benefits? I do. I think the benefits for me outweigh the possible harms in the sense that I believe more people need to be more resilient, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Which is such a comfortable society. But do I think we have an ice bath deficiency? No. So when people tell me, oh, Ash, I can't believe you don't ice bath, like you're the exact type of person I'd expect that from. I'm like, you expect me to ice bath? Yeah, no, I'm good, thanks.
Oh, yeah. Ash, I think it would actually be too easy for you.
I don't know and I don't care to find out.
Yeah.
I've got the history of having had Raynaud's when I was younger, you know, experiencing those really extreme, uncomfortable, painful hands. And then with Oliver and breastfeeding him in the winter, having that vasospasm, I'm like, look, I go when I want to, but I don't need to be sitting in ice baths all the time. I don't think that's, you know, for me personally, resilience enhancing. But on the same token, for people who are never uncomfortable, it's a great opportunity in a degree of camaraderie to get uncomfortable and start to feel discomfort, to feel dis-ease, to feel like they've got to be able to use their mindset to control pain, discomfort, maybe emotional shifts that occur with that panic, like you mentioned, that fight or flight reflex that kicks in, you know, that breathing, you know, that sort of panicked responsiveness. And I think that's powerful. Yeah. I think it's powerful for people today to know that you can handle hard stuff. We have to get more comfortable with dealing with hard stuff. Mm. So do I think any of it's worthwhile? Absolutely. If you feel like you need to deal with hard stuff in a more controlled way. You know, and that's really cool. So I still advocate for it. I mean, you hear me people say all the time, oh, you know, I've got this. I'm like, go jump in an ice bath. And really what I'm trying to do is like go and stretch yourself mentally. Go and push yourself a little. Like go get uncomfortable. Go see if you can. Try it. Yes. Realize there's a failure point and decide whether you quit or you fail forward and go, I'm going to try different. Try it a different way. So anyway, that's just personal stuff. But let's have a chat probably about, you know, for me, looking at the benefits because that's another question. Like, well, what's it good for? And this is where the research is always a bit hit and miss. There's no great studies. I think there's a lot of anecdotal. There's a lot of case papers. There's a lot of research relating to sort of anecdotal outcomes. But there's not hard evidence that I was finding that made me go, I absolutely have to do that. Like it's absolutely biological imperative that you do this because it's so good for your health. I think, you know, the conversations relating to that is like we just talked about, that allostatic stress. So let's tap into just a bit of the research. And obviously there's so many different layers to looking at the effect of cold water immersion or cold exposure. And some of the key areas that have been studied are things like the hormonal system, looking at neural connectivity, so our nervous system, looking at inflammation and stress, and looking at psychology and mental health. And so these are areas where there's actually, you know, some consistent research being produced with inconsistent results. And that's probably the trick of most people and all the health benefits that are being claimed is that, you know, how much of it is known and researched and how much of it's anecdotal, which is relating to how people feel and their own experiences. So when it comes to things like the hormones, for example, there's a hormone called adrenocorticotropic hormone, ACTH, and cortisol levels seem to decrease significantly after a short time of regular cold exposure. And they say that this is probably due to the acclimational adaptation, suggesting cold water exposure regularly has little effect on stimulating the pituitary adrenal cortex axis. So this is our, you know, our stress hormone pathways. However, they've noted that there was an increase in concentration of norepinephrine, which is suggesting it might play a role in the pain alleviation pathways. So this is why regular cold exposure may result in an experience of reduced pain and discomfort. And of course, there's also that other factor, which is the inflammation and stress response as well. So, you know, these are probably some of the reasons why people cite benefits of cold water immersion. There's very little known about the effect of regular sort of cold water exposure on the nervous system in humans, but there are some studies that come from animal models as well. So I think, you know, we can always extrapolate, but until there's some evidence and hardline evidence for humans, it's all very good and well to be using rats. But, you know, I think they're suggesting, though, if we improve resilience, we may have great impacts on our nervous system, which will reduce things like neurocognitive decline. And so they're looking at it as potentially a protective pathway that might help with things like any neurodegenerative conditions. So look, I guess that's a watch this space experience, isn't it? Like, let's see what happens there in the future. There's definitely a few studies talking about regular cold exposure and how the immune system responds. So that's a really good one. And obviously it helps to improve immune system regulation. That's the key takeaway from all of it, which is also similar to exercise, the post-exercise responses as well. So, you know, whether you expose yourself to really cold water or you go and do some exercise, you're going to get a similar benefit on the immune system, which is really cool. What else? And I think some of the other things too, look, mental health is one of those key leading disabilities in today's society. So anything that can help people improve mindset and mental well-being, I think, is a benefit. And this is probably where, you know, the camaraderie of ice bathing is so beneficial, because there's a real, you know, there's a real group tribe involved in ice bathing, I've seen, and that can be really helpful in people's general mental health. Because I've noticed, like down at Scarborough, there's an ice bathing and then there's a men's circle after it. And it's like really interesting to see that they really bring back that tribal approach, which is supportive. And I think that because people are then creating a lifestyle with this physiologic stress, it can help to improve mental health conditions, because there's almost like a self-reliance. There's an understanding, a fulfillment that can come from doing something really difficult, that little dopamine rush that we talked about. Like, there's so many ways in which this could be helpful. So I guess the takeaways are, do you want to do it? Because the research says everything about it is good. I'd say just do it because you want to, and if you feel good, enjoy the benefits. They do talk about the negative impacts, and I think it's just really important to also be aware that there's certain risks. And for people who may be exposed to thermal stress, this can induce things like asthma, right? So it's not for everyone. You really have to take it as a personal experience. But, yeah, that's kind of like a short story of the discussions of the research. The risks involved, look, the only thing I've really found that I thought that's interesting, I haven't really seen many people discuss that risk, is the fact that there's the risk of magnesium depletion.
Mm.
So the quick mechanism involved there is that when we do hit that stress response, what the body will do is dump magnesium into the bloodstream. But to do that, it will draw it out of the bone. So regular cold exposure or high thermal stress will actually cause the body to release magnesium into the bloodstream, because that is actually helping to provide the power to the mitochondria, the little energy cells in the body. So the more cold you dose, the more magnesium you need.
Yes.
And that was really interesting. I was like, huh, that's cool, because, I mean, obviously that's really beneficial. So then they were talking about, like, possibly the benefits of the transdermal absorption in the Epsom salt ice baths.
Oh. Yes.
To help to offset that risk of the depletion of magnesium. So, so that's, I mean, that's just one element. So if you are ice bathing and you're not supporting your system with good magnesium supplementation or dietary benefits from, say, dark leafy green vegetables and all your good rich magnesium sources, then you might want to consider that, because there's a potential risk that you might be depleting from bone mineral, which is, potentially, we talked earlier, it's like, well, yeah, could that create osteoporotic risk? I don't know. I don't think there's any research on it. So I wouldn't want to be the case study that goes, oh, because of my regular ice bathing, I've now got, you know, osteoporotic risks. I don't know is the answer. But I think if in doubt, rule it out. Just cover your bases, take magnesium as well. So that was an interesting one.
Fascinating. I had no idea about the magnesium leaching from bones with that stress exposure ash. That's so cool. And also, I think just looking big picture when you're doing these sorts of things, and they are so trendy at the moment. And I wonder how long the ice bath trend is going to hang around for as well. I do think it's here to stay for at least a while, but I'm just very curious about that. One thing that I do, an instance that I do really recommend ice baths is to my male patients who have low testosterone.
Yes.
Because it is one of the fastest ways to get a sort of intermittent or temporary rise in testosterone, which I just think is fascinating. And it's so interesting that the two topics we're talking about tonight both have opposite ends of the spectrum impacts on men's health. And I'll dive into that a little bit later when we talk about the sauna. But that is, I think, a really cool mechanism too.
Yeah. So I think, yeah. Do we think there's benefits? I believe the benefits just come from the fact that you challenge your body, that you challenge your mind as well, that you do something that's kind of cool and trending but not negative, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know how there's some things where you go, oh, just because it's trendy doesn't make it good. Like, I think this is around to stay. I think this is just a human thing that's always been in our DNA, is how to survive environmental stress.
Yes.
And so I think I would probably only just do it. I mean, I jump in the ocean, so it doesn't really give me this, I don't feel threatened by it, because I'm like, well, I feel like I've got adaptive stress. Like, if suddenly there was no electricity and I had to survive in a cold place and, you know, didn't have a way to warm myself, I don't feel like I'd be at risk. But I feel like all of us need to have this little subconscious knowledge that if all the lights went out and there was no, you know, heating, we'd be okay. It's like a survivalism.
Absolutely.
So I look at it that way and just say, look, it's going to just make you a more of a survivalist. So go and do it.
And ladies, I just want to make mention that it's probably better in terms of your hormones to, if you are ice bathing, to do it in the first half of your cycle rather than close to your period or during menstruation, just because of those stresses. And there is a genetic, there's a SNP that some people have that means that their stress response to cold exposure is greatly exaggerated. And I can't remember exactly what the SNP is. Ash, I've just thought of it then that I should have looked that up. But there is, a certain subgroup of people who will have a worsening stress response to cold exposure. So it's just something to be aware of. So it may, that form of stressor on the body may not be for everybody. But if that's not, then possibly, you know, sauna bathing or, heat bathing, whatever you want to call it, may be more up your alley like it is mine. These are both forms of hormetic stress on the body, right?
Exactly.
And that hormetic stress means essentially it's like a moderate stress on the body that gives that resilience and activates certain cellular responses. And saunering, however you want to sort of describe that, has become so popular lately. And you'll see, you know, infrared saunas on every corner. And most of the research around the benefits of saunas has actually been done on traditional saunas, so steam saunas or dry saunas. And I think that that's a really important distinction to make. And historically, this is the way, you know, saunas have always been done. For example, like, I think you made reference to, European sort of traditions where they do the heat cold exposure, and certainly the sauna bathing, particularly in places like Finland where they've done most of this research, has always been done in traditional saunas. So when they're touting all of the health benefits that come from things like cardiovascular health and a reduction in all-cause mortality and increase in all of the good, you know, mental health benefits and everything else, and I'll go through those too, most of that has been tested on the populations who use the traditional saunas. And a lot of this information is, I've also pulled from Dr. Rhonda Patrick, who is certainly an expert in this field. And she certainly delineates the benefits there. But I want you to just think about this heat stress or this hormetic stress you get from saunas comes from, you know, century-long history or traditions that do get those those health benefits from that heat, but usually they're doing it as a group as well. So it's almost like a little bit of a socialization that happens. Traditionally, it was men who did the saunas too. And I do think that the reason it's catching on as to such a like a positive health trend is for a good reason, because saunering has been associated with you know, this reduction in cardiovascular dysfunction. So, for example, men who use saunas 2 to 3 times a week showed an up to 25% lower risk of sudden cardiac death, as well as fatal coronary heart disease as well. If they saunaed 5 times a week, that reduction was more significant. So essentially, there was a 40% reduction in all-cause mortality compared to those who either didn't sauna or saunaed, say, once a week. Now, that's a really hard thing to sort of really look at, and you can't really go, is it correlation or causation? But that's certainly a very positive trend. It has also been shown to have improvements in focus and brain function because of the release of, you know, some of those neurotransmitters as well, or those stress hormones, which aid in focus, in better brain function. There's also been some discussions around the potential sauna use in treating conditions, even like ADHD, because it's been shown to increase that BDNF, so that brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which shows this enhanced learning, helps with neurogenesis, and possibly has this role to play in decreasing anxiety and depression as well. So these are pretty remarkable benefits that they're touting. And for more of a sort of physical side of things or other physical benefits, it's been shown that it can increase that muscle hypertrophy, which is essentially muscle growth from exercise. But then overall, just, you know, an improvement in overall health and longevity. So, you know, a decrease in inflammation, an increase in heat shock proteins, an increase in vasodilation, and all of those sorts of things as well as like dramatic mitochondrial benefits as well, which is so important for cellular energy and all sorts of different things like that. So in summary, they'll say things like it's good for your brain, it's good for relaxation, your cardiovascular system, your mental health, muscle response, but also detoxification, relaxation, chronic pain and inflammation. So I want to distinguish, though, that most of these benefits have been attributed to traditional saunas. Mm-hmm. And traditional saunas, the heating method is quite different to infrared saunas, and the temperatures are significantly different as well. So in traditional saunas, that temperature might start at about somewhere around 75 to 80 degrees. Up to much higher than that. Sorry, that's not an absolute number, but they might start around there. So, and in Fahrenheit, that's about 170 to 200 degrees Fahrenheit. And in traditional saunas, the air is heated, which then heats the skin on your body, which then increases your core body temperature. Whereas in infrared saunas, now my sauna goes up to 65 degrees. And in infrared radiation, because it is a form of radiation, it penetrates the skin. So the radiation, I guess, that's created by the infrared penetrates the skin. So it heats the body from the inside out. So usually those temperatures or those benefits come from sort of 40 to 60 degrees. That's the sort of max temp that they can get to, or 110 to 140 degrees in Fahrenheit. So what that means is that the highest temperature that you would get in an infrared sauna is at least 15 degrees lower than the lowest temperature you would get in a traditional sauna. So it seems that the higher the heat, the better the health benefits are. But there's a theory that the infrared, even though it's a lower temperature, that heat directly penetrates the body more deeply. So you'll get the same benefits at a lower temperature. But I still think we're waiting on that research. You do certainly need to consider the fact that the infrared sauna is still a form of EMF, or, you know, there's certainly significant electromagnetic sort of radiation that you can get from that as well. So with my sauna, that is the lowest EMF that, you know, is available. And also all of the timber that they've used and even the glues that they've used to put it together are all sort of very low chemical or chemical free, because you need to consider these things. If you're sitting in, you know, an infrared sauna that's heating up, what chemicals have they used to, you know, put this sauna together? Because obviously you're going to be sweating and inhaling all of these things as well. The other
Absolutely.
Thing.
And I think that's just, I don't even know if I've ever heard really anyone talk about that stuff, which is fascinating, because it's high priority if you're going to be opening pores of the skin and, yes. You know, like you said, bringing in stuff. In, I mean, everyone says, oh, yeah, but you're just sweating stuff out. I'm like, well, every pore in your body is open. You're also going to be absorbing things in. So what are you sitting on? And like you said, what are you breathing in? That's super important.
And there's also another argument that the heat shock protein response that you get, which is essentially a really incredible mechanism for boosted immune resilience and everything else, that kicks in at about 72 degrees Celsius. So, for example, my infrared sauna would never get to that temperature. But do I need it to do that? Maybe, maybe not. Whenever I've got an opportunity to use a traditional sauna, I will. But, you know, I have just found that I just love sweating. I love getting in my sauna, and I might do it maybe a couple of times a week. And if I do it in the early evening, I have noticed that my sleep is a lot better as well. So, you know, just, and maybe that's because I'm heating my core body temperature and then it's cooling off and dropping, and that's more conducive for even deeper sleep potentially. But yeah, I really enjoy that. But I'm also not under any disillusion that it is better than, you know, traditional saunas or anything like that. So that's just the caveat on there. But certainly for mood and relaxation, I love it. And I think also because it is a time where I can't sit in there and do work, for example. I'll take my Kindle in there though, and so I'll read, and often like I'll put my Kindle on an ice pack so it doesn't overheat in the sauna. But it's this like opportunity just to kind of defrag a little bit. But I will say that for the women listening who are trying to conceive, I would strongly be discouraging your hubbies or your partners from using saunas if you're trying to conceive, because it has been shown to be really devastating for sperm production. So this is an absolute no-go zone for guys who are trying to conceive. I know that there are some saunas around where they will give the guys ice packs to sit on. But I reckon this is just the time to avoid it.
Cool. Well, I think that's pretty good advice. I was actually just thinking about all those different, you know, layers and health benefits. It just goes to show the human body, there's so many ways to access, you know, and promote healing pathways, isn't there?
Yes.
And I think it's not a matter of having to do all of the things. And I think this is where we get a bit tied up in trying to optimize performance, and everyone's biohacking. And if it's not this, it's that. And if it's not, oh, if you're not doing that, then you're not getting the most. It's like, oh my God, if you're not, you know, doing infrared sauntering, then like you could never be detoxing as well as the people who are. Like there's a lot of almost like peer pressure applied to this space. Is there an optimal timeline for things like infrared sauntering? Because I know in ice bathing world, they're often talking around 10 to 11 minutes a week. So it's not a huge amount of exposure, but it's enough to create that sort of kick-in effect, which is that cortisol spike, which is hits the brain chemistry, as we talked about. I didn't mention it, but it was, you know, kind of like a by thought. They always talk about thermogenesis, the effect of, you know, thermogenesis, whether it be hot or cold. In cold exposure, it increases brown fat thermogenesis, which, you know, they talk about being able to boost core body metabolism, so potentially aiding weight loss, which makes me smile, because when I was in Germany and there's the biggest, heaviest people jumping in and out of cold water back into the saunas, I'm like, clearly it doesn't aid thermogenesis or whatever.
Yes.
These people are extremely overweight. But anyway, that's beside the point. It doesn't mean it works for everyone if your diet and lifestyle is terrible.
And, you know, as we always say, you can't overcompensate for a terrible diet or not exercising. Just having a sauna or jumping in an ice bath, it does not take the place of your timeless health principles.
Yeah. And I think, again, it is talks to that idea of just discomfort, right?
Yeah.
Whenever we push our bodies and create a stress or impact, so, you know, cold or hot, and we're really uncomfortable, it creates that, you know, in that moment, it creates this spike in adrenaline. And that's actually what's helping to modulate and regulate our pain responses, which over time we actually get better resilience to pain. Isn't that cool? So we can actually train resilience to pain, which just means that if you're someone who hates cold, hates hot, hates pain, this is kind of exactly what you need to do to help increase your bandwidth and your ability to withstand discomfort. It's kind of like why I say to women who hate the idea of childbirth, getting them to squat or to do wall squats for as long as they can until they burn and fatigue, and, you know, they're so scared of the pain of their legs hurting. I'm like, you're not going to die. You know, like, and your muscles are not going to explode. Yeah. So get comfortable with this pain, because you can breathe your way through this. You can relax your way through this rather than fighting it. And I think this speaks to all of these sorts of methods, because exercise does the same thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why do people love exercising that pain barrier? Because it increases your ability to withstand more pain.
Yeah.
That's why people become exercise addicts, and you think, oh, they push their body so hard. It stops feeling pain the way you and I might feel it. You know, if we went for a run like that at that pace, oh my God, we'd be dead. It'd be exhausting. You'd fall over. But other people.
Me before you, though, Ash.
Yeah. Maybe, possibly. But it just shows you that whatever you're choosing to do, by constantly pushing those points in your body to say you can withstand this. Now, there are always caveats to everything.
Yeah.
Because not everyone is going to be designed for, you know, cold exposure, for example. There's cardiac risks involved.
Yeah.
Not everyone is designed for heat exposure. So please, 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 you know, check and make sure that you're not going to fall into a risk category that could put you in a really, really bad place. I like the idea of just generally finding ways in your life to get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Train a little harder. Get a bit of lactic acid, you know, put yourself in an infrared sauna for longer than you thought you could.
Yes.
Jump in some cold water, put yourself, you know, for most people, ice bath is just such a far stretch from where they are. There's no point even entertaining it.
Yeah.
Start with something as simple as when you finish your shower, turn your shower tap to cold for 30 seconds. You know, and breathe your way through it and try and build that up. Maybe you'll start at 30 seconds, 10 seconds, and then you'll build up. And the goal is to build up to around 3 minutes a couple of times a week. It's going to give you a similar impact as ice bathing.
Yeah.
Splashing your face with cold water. You know how many people get that, you know, that rush of freshness. There's so many ways to do it. So I've always liked a challenge, though.
Yes, like, that is
like
very
a challenge
true.
That. I must say, while you were talking about the saunering thing, I was interested, was actually recently regarding concussion therapy, returned veterans, so military veterans who've been exposed to TBIs and recurrent concussions. There's actually, you know, some really interesting research down that pathway of infrared, but it's red light therapy and near infrared spectrum therapy, SIMRAD, the brain, which is, you know, improving oxygenation and mitochondrial function in the brain, you know, which is creating systemic whole body effects, you know, like help heal the brain from these recurrent TBIs, which is traumatic brain injuries. And, you know, there's so many different things. So I've been looking at this concussion management strategy using a near infrared cap. So they have a cap with all these little light nodes all through it, which is fascinating. Now, the funny thing is the people who've taken that up, it's not just about brain injuries. They're actually using it for hair growth.
Yes.
Hair growth.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
So benefits are out there in so many different ways. When are you going to ice bath next?
Oh, Ash, I don't know. Why don't you come down here and we'll do it together? A friend of mine owns Alchemy Saunas and they've got like a brilliant setup there, so we can jump in together and then we can do a traditional sauna, because they do not have infrared saunas. They only have traditional saunas, and they're adamant about that, which is really cool. So and it's a beautiful setup, so we can go jump in there. Or you can also just come over here for a sauna if you want. I do not have an ice bath.
No, that's fine. We'll just go duck in the ocean and then come back for a sauna.
So. Oh, that's a nice idea. Yeah, I think that that's much better. All right, ladies. Well, and, you know, for the fellas listening as well, thanks again for joining us on Wellness Women Radio. We are the Wellness Women, Dr. Ashley Bond and Dr. Andrea Huddleston. We are raising the bar for women's health. And until next time, be well.
This has been a production of TheWellnessCouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on Facebook.com/TheWellnessCouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives.
Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.